The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
This episode of Beyond is brought to you by Gamefly.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 Shut up, both of you.
Beyond.
Cool it. All right? I'll turn the car right around. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Beyond, episode 516. My name is Max Scoville, and I'm joined by Alana Pierce.
Hi.
Brian Altano.
What's up, young whippersnappers?
You said enough.
What?
Wow.
I'll get you.
You too.
Yeah, no.
Oh.
Nope. Ooh. And then Marty.
I do know a lot about the periodic table.
We weren't recording when you started talking about that.
Well, that was a sweet treat for the prequel.
I don't want to talk about the periodic table. All right. So a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, sort of, I guess. I don't know. I always say that. Sometimes I'm lying. We got some good stuff, though. Battlefront 2's campaign will be 5 to 7 hours long.
You ruined the entire story in the intro.
Did I?
That was it?
That was it. That's the story. The campaign will be 5 to 7 hours long.
Beyond will be 5 to 7 minutes long.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that's we got that single player trailer last week, and there've been some kind of like little bits of noise about that game. And we should probably talk about this. Adam Thorington Jones in our Facebook group says, "I'm worried Star Wars Battlefront is going to be extremely unbalanced. This is coming out of this sort of concerns about microtransactions. People are having some weird worries about this game."
Yeah.
So let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, start at the top. I think the 5 to 7 hour long thing is great.
I think
that's sort of a sweet spot with. In my opinion, with certain campaigns now, that's kind of where Lost Legacy was, and I really like that.
You know what else is 5 to 7 hours long?
The original Star Wars movies.
Yeah. And those seemed okay,
yeah.
Right? Those were pretty good, I think.
I think that length almost guarantees that it won't just have a bunch of boring padding, and it should be a pretty strong story, but mm-hmm. at the same time, I was expecting it to be longer than that for
really?
Whatever reason. I was thinking it would be 10 to 12.
Yeah. Mm. Really?
I don't know why, but...
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't know where that expectation came from. You look at the track record...
A lot of shooter campaigns at 8 to 10,
yeah.
Probably where I'm getting it from.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of them are also 5 to 6, especially if there's heavy multiplayer there.
I mean, you look at Titanfall was 9, right?
Yeah.
Was it that long? I think
yeah.
it was shorter than that.
But I think if you combine the Battlefield 1 things, it's probably close to 6.
Yeah.
No, you look at the like DICE's track record specifically, and they usually hover around like 5 to 7. Like that's mm-hmm. about their sweet spot. The exception being Battlefield Hardline, which had the single player developed by Visceral, who are known for doing more story based stuff.
Right.
But
I just feel like we spent all of 2015 complaining that Battlefront didn't have a single player, and now it does, and we're spending all of 2017 complaining that it's not long enough.
I don't think...
I haven't seen anyone complain about it.
Yeah.
Almost every comment on our Rewind Theater was a backlash about how this game is too short.
I think I don't think that's kinda backlash sucks. About that. I think it's a combined backlash against the weird notion that EA is the worst actual company in America, and then a rebound from the Visceral news.
They
last
are having
week.
A huge PR problem right now, for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
It's a rough week, if you think about it.
I mean, it's a rough year for EA.
Yeah. But specifically, that last week, one Star Wars single-player focus game was canceled, and then 2 days later we got a story trailer for a new Star Wars single-player game shipping in 3.5 weeks that we then found out from previews is only 5 to 7 hours long, and I think that was sort of the chosen one suddenly to do all the heavy lifting for Star Wars single-player for the next forever, possibly, right? So people
plus
wanted
the
more.
Idea that the multiplayer is unfair because of the microtransaction-heavy stuff, so it's just like this game is got some PR problems going on right now. And it's going to be tough to break through. But, like, yeah, I'm cool with 5 to 7 hour long campaigns. I really liked Battle
Battlefield 1, and I played through the entirety of that. And I really love those campaigns, and I feel like they didn't outstay their welcome. So I think it's going to be a good length, but like I said, I was expecting more, but I don't feel negative about
that. Yeah, that being said, Tom, our PC editor, got to play the first like 2 hours-ish, first couple of missions, and they sound awesome. And it sounds like it's a huge mixture of, like there's one mission, I totally thought it was going to be, there are two ground missions and then there's a space mission, like that kind of thing. But he said there's one mission where you're like going through the remnants of the exploded Death Star in your TIE fighter, like dodging everything, and then you dock into a ship, and then it turns into like, going through the ship on foot and shooting things. And so I'm like, that sounds cool. That sounds like there's a ton of energy to this.
When I played the multiplayer game in 2015, I've talked about this on the show before, but I lost a lot because I would stop and smell the roses and just sort of walk around Jabba's Palace and be like, are those Gamorrean guards behind that door and all this?
You don't want to smell Jabba's Palace. That place doesn't smell great.
That's true. But my team was really let down because I wasn't there supporting them. I was basically just like on a, like tourism. And so I'm excited for the single player campaign because I will take my time walking through the, you know, whatever cantinas there are, whatever space stations there are, and just really like geek out about every little detail, look in the corners at all the weird droids and stuff like that. I love that kind of stuff.
Especially when there'll be a bunch of planets we haven't seen. Like we saw Iden's like kind of home city that she lived in, which had those red flower petals that when they fall in the water, they like just like bleed red. And like that kind of stuff's going to be really nice.
And also we saw like
straight up just Ahsoka.
Like, pretty much. Yeah. Like Maz Kanata's in the game and you go to Tokadana and you go to her palace. And like that seems cool. Like I want to wander around that place and like poke around and see what kind of weird stuff's going on in the basement.
Yeah, I think what's worth noting is that out of the box, this will be three times as big of a game as the first one was. Like, that's it has literally three times as much crap on every front. There's no season pass. And then kind of to counterbalance that, there are a bunch of microtransactions, which people are really worried about. But I mean, the fact that it's got it's not just DICE making this like the first one was. It is DICE and Criterion and Motive all working on sort of separate departments.
Yep.
And I don't know. They've got more of a framework to come from. Like, they're not. Like, I think the first one was very much rushed out the door to line up with Force Awakens hype. And I think it's interesting also to keep in mind, like, people's expectations going into this because sort of the state of affairs for Star Wars is in a very different spot than it was in 2015. Mm-hmm. 2015, everyone's like, oh, my God, it's back. The Force Awakens. And I was I watched this with you, Brian, where you were like, oh, my God, I'm getting back into Star Wars. I'm getting excited about Star Wars again. And I think a lot of people were also like, well, there's no single player in Battlefront? This sucks. I want to play with bots or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
but people also bought it anyway because it was the only thing they had.
Yeah.
It's kind of different.
And by the time that game had been out for a year and they'd kind of burned through all their DLC and season pass crap, it was a huge game. There was a ton of stuff in there. It just really, really sucks that wasn't there at launch. I mean, they had a bunch of heroes and villains, and when you play heroes and villains mode, it was actually interesting. But that was only if you shelled out for the season pass, which
this is the problem with video games right now. Like, how do you sell a video game with a AAA budget? How do you do that? There's no answer to it because if you do it with a season pass, there's backlash. If you do it with loot boxes, there's backlash. You can't raise the price from $60 because no one has ever done that ever. So what do? How do you sell a video game that costs a ton of money? You don't. You cancel it.
I mean,
right?
The Dota model works super well, like having tons and tons of loot boxes, but mostly have them be aesthetic things.
Right.
Like, I think that works super well.
Yeah.
And especially because they work on like fostering the community with Dota, like by having a lot of that money go towards the international. Like, I think that that's a really good way to do it, is mostly cosmetic.
I mean, the insane thing is cosmetic things in Dota and Team Fortress have kept the lights on at Valve because they haven't released a game in 7 years.
Right.
Well, they also have all those games they publish, but they make
there's
a bunch
also,
of money off
there's
of
also
yeah. I mean, Steam, yeah, but I mean, they don't have to. Like, they've done, I'm assuming, 100 R&D mock-ups of single-player games of Half-Life 3 and Portal 3 that never need to see the light of day. So Valve has that sustainability that EA doesn't. And you saw, like, I mean, the day after recorded last week, the news came that EA decided to shut down Visceral Games and completely pivot on what Amy Hennig's game was going to be, you know, in theory, what we assume is without her and moving to EA Canada as a development, and everything they're saying, they very much don't want a 12-hour single-player game. They need something that has legs over the course of a year or two, and they want their Destiny.
Yeah, I want to actually jump ahead in the kind of run of show here. We got an interesting little soundbite from Rockstar talking about GTA 5 and how that never got single-player DLC. And they were on record saying that they were planning on doing single-player DLC in 2013. Mm-hmm. And they kind of just talked about it, and they're like, that just didn't happen. That didn't work out. They wound up working on GTA Online, which was, like, I think way more ambitious than anyone expected.
Right.
And then also pointing out the fact that the single-player component of that game is really three games tied together. And I think a lot of people were sort of like mad about them of not returning to do single player stuff, but single player stuff also doesn't really keep people around. Like that's
they also mentioned like Red Dead Redemption 2 and how much resources online had. And in Rockstar's case, I think that it's like, well, if we had this, then we probably wouldn't have this. Mm-hmm. Like if we had the single player DLC, then Red Dead Redemption 2 would be further away than it already is. So it's like, that's just a
I think
snowball effect for them.
I think I said on Beyond like a year ago, I was like, if you're upset that Rockstar didn't make single player DLC for GTA 5, like, it's your fault for playing so much multiplayer. Like, people pumped so much money into GTA Online that they were like, why would we do anything else? Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's kind of, it's kind of our own fault for that. But I'm really fascinated with the way all of this goes, because a couple of years ago, we saw the middle tier of the industry fall out almost entirely. And now we have this massive divide between indies and AAA publishers. And there's no right way to sell a game. There's no right price for a game. But I do know that the $60... Yeah. I don't think the $60 thing is working anymore. And I hate to say it because I come in like the bearer of bad news, but I think the prices of video games haven't gone up in a very, very long time, and I think they need to sort of offset. And if they do, if they go to 70 or 75 and we see a reduction in microtransactional DLC and non-cosmetic loot box stuff, then I think people might be okay with it. But we're expecting the world for $60 and have been for like 15 years now, and something's got
to
budge.
It's such a hard thing to, because, you know, marketing, being the first person to be the one who raises it to 70, like, you get torn apart.
Oh, yeah.
No, no marketing team is ever going to be the one to do that.
No, everyone's got to come together to do it.
The interesting thing about that was that's pretty much what happened at the start of the 360 generation. Yeah. As before that, games were, I mean, disc-based games, because Nintendo was selling games for $85. Disc-based games were $50. And then the 360 came out, and pretty much Microsoft was like, hey, we're the first ones doing this next-gen thing. We're a year before Wii and before...
I'm just laughing because the whole time in Australia, they were $100, and you're like, they were $50.
Mm-hmm. No, I think...
$110 in Australia.
Yeah, and then that ushered in the era of the $60 game, and that was, what?
Well, I think 11? They're $90 in Australia now. Yeah. Like, even there, it dropped. Yeah. Like, I mean, pretty much everywhere it went
video
down.
Video games are expensive.
Games are getting more expensive to make, but the only thing that's, like, going against that is that, like, EA specifically are earning more money year over year, so they are profitable, like dramatically profitable. So it's like, yeah, their stuff is getting more expensive, but they're still making more money every year, so it's not like they're losing. Like, the balance on that?
Well, because we don't know exactly how that scales, right? Like, if they are making more and more money every year, like fist over hand or whatever the stupid saying is, how much money are they spending on hours of voice acting or mocap?
I mean, it's true, we don't know what the direct profit is, but Well, I guess it's that maybe they're seeing less of a profit margin, and that's why microtransactions, like, that's the ideal world, but I feel like it's probably more likely that they're just like, but we can do this now with the digital era.
Well, it's like if Battlefront 2 is 7 hours long, and most people are like, either that's okay, or they're like, I'm upset with that. If it was to be 14 hours long, would that, A, be enough to satiate people? Would B, people spend more money on it? I don't think they would. Or C, how much would that put them in the red? Like, how much money is it going to cost to double the length of the campaign in this game without any expectation to raise the price on something? And it's very odd, right? Like, I don't think that you necessarily should always pay for more. I don't pay more money to see longer movies. You know, Blade Runner was like 3 hours. It's one of my favorite movies of the year. Same price as seeing something that is an hour and 10 minutes. So it's a problem that needs to be solved, because our expectations are going up. Production values are going up. Resources and costs are going up. Game prices are staying flat, and they're making up the money elsewhere. So something's got to get.
They're also selling more every year. The games industry, or games, is the most profitable entertainment medium that's growing every year in sales. So it's like the whole thing is going up, and it's, I don't know. I don't want games to be flooded with microtransactions, but at the same time, like, I think the aesthetic way is the best way to do it, and then it's optional and it's not like forced onto everyone.
I'd say one of the big ways we got hoodwinked in the last few years was when games started going primarily digital, and we all said to ourselves, like, they're getting rid of the trucks and the shipping and the brick and mortar and the employees. Surely the savings will be passed on to us. No, still $60 to download something. You just don't get a box or a manual with it anymore.
Yeah, if you don't like it, you can't trade it in.
Yeah.
So one thing worth noting is there was an interview that went up with Manveer Hare from former BioWare dev, and he was talking about basically how BioWare worked and how EA's kind of interaction with that. It sounded like he was kind of just going like mouthing off a little bit, you know, within reason.
Yeah.
And one thing I thought was really interesting from this was he was saying how I think it was EA sees more opportunities in open world games to monetize. Like, there's more places to put stuff for either microtransactions or like a multiplayer component. And you know, people buy like people are buying like $15,000 worth of like Mass Effect 3 like multiplayer cards.
There's like guppies and whales.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And I mean, literally the most expensive microtransaction card you can get in GTA Online is like the whale shark card.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's kind of on the nose there. And people obviously do buy that kind of stuff. What I think is, I think GTA is really just a fascinating example to look at because yes, there's a semi-linear story in there. Like there's a story that you play through a campaign that's what 20, 30 hours or something.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the framework for multiplayer in there. Like they built a world and they put a story inside mm-hmm. of it. You look at something like Battlefront, it's a series of maps, and to do a single player, you've got to kind of carve this like linear line through it. Mm-hmm. And you look at something like what Visceral was presumably working on. I mean, obviously I haven't seen that game, but it sounds like they want to push it into being something more multiplayer, and that they want, I think, from the ground up, they have to build something that's more like, this is not a linear experience. I mean, it's easy to look at this.
More monetizable.
Yeah,
right?
It's easy to look at this as the divide between just single player and multiplayer, or like just like linear narrative versus something you can throw microtransactions
right.
at that doesn't make sense. But I think it's also just trying to restructure something from the ground up to be more sustainable in the long run. And you look at GTA, and that was a game that was in development for God knows how long, and they also are allowed to take their time. Like Take Two has been like, okay, Rockstar, you've been making games that have been the top selling thing on whatever platform for almost 20 years.
Yeah, now. I mean, NPD came out before we got in here, and GTA 5 is still in the top 10. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly.
And it will be until we die.
Yeah.
Not in Minecraft.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, these are sandboxes. They're almost like they're platforms sort of in and of themselves. And then you look at something like Battlefront, and even fundamentally just as like Star Wars as a platform, you got to have different planets in there. You can't just have like an open world that's like, here's 15 miles to screw around in. It's like, well, what planet? You know?
Well, and you would let, if you made an open world Tatooine game, you would let people down. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, how come I can't go to Hoth? How come
exactly.
I can't go to Takodana? But GTA is really interesting because it is a single player game for the most part, right? Always has been. But in the middle of your 18-hour story playthrough, you can just stop and not answer phone calls and not do missions and just kind of mess around for 100 hours mm-hmm. if you want. Most of the videos of people playing GTA Online are not beating missions. It's them just screwing around.
The one YouTube video I have of GTA 5 Let's Play is me doing the thing where you run really fast at someone and then press the button to jump.
Yeah.
And you just flop on them.
And you just kind of like ragdoll in. Yeah, it's
that's
great.
The only Let's Play that
it's
I
awesome.
Have
GTA. It's awesome. And that's the kind of thing you can do for like 100 hours in that game if you want to. You
and
know?
I'm going to say this right now. There's not going to be anything like that in like the Battlefront single player.
No.
Like it's going to be fairly like, okay, run through this hallway and shoot these guys. And like, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be Star Wars, but like there's not really... It's not the kind of thing you come back to unless you're kind of doing like a score attack type of thing.
I mean, I just want an emotional story out of it. That's what I really want out of that campaign. Yeah, and you can totally deliver that in 5 to 7 hours.
Yeah, yeah,
totally agree.
Hello there. Would you like to save money and play more video games? Well, let me introduce you to our sponsor, Gamefly. Gamefly is the best way to buy and rent all your favorite games. At Gamefly.com, you pick your favorite games and have them mailed directly to your door or mailbox. Gamefly is the leading video game rental service with over 9,000 titles to choose from. You can try your favorite games before you buy and keep the games as long as you want with no late fees. So if you're stuck on a boss fight or having a really good time, it's not a big deal. You can cancel at any time, and they also offer movie rentals too. Go to Gamefly.com/farbeyond and start your free premium 30-day trial today. The premium trial allows you to check out 2 games and or movies at a time. You can only get this offer again by visiting Gamefly.com/farbeyond. Now go sign up and start playing all your favorite games absolutely free for 30 days right now.
So on the subject of big, huge, open sandbox games, can we talk a little bit about Assassin's Creed Origins?
Sure.
What are we allowed to say? That so comes out...
We're recording this 2 days before the embargo.
Yeah.
3 days before the embargo.
Well, the full review embargo, but at the same time, they said like we're allowed to do review in progress discussions.
And
now.
Max and I went to a preview event and mm-hmm. played a couple hours of
which
it.
I don't think I ever got to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what I can say.
No, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. Alana has to be mostly quiet because Alana's reviewing it.
I just watched you play the game for 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about something that's
and we didn't do any story missions. It's mostly just mechanical and we killed some hippos.
Yeah, but you're pretty high level. I don't know what we can say, really. Anyway,
I can talk about the preview event. We went to the same preview
event.
Yeah, you can talk about what's on screen here because we already published this on the website.
Exactly, yeah. So,
does that bud?
This is, I've gone really back and forth about this a bunch of times because I'm like, Assassin's Creed needs like a full overhaul. And then I sort of checked this out at E3 and I was like, there's a lot of stuff going on here. It's kind of a ton to take in. Kind of revisiting it, I think it's really got something. It feels like a sort of weird mix of like Witcher 3 and Far Cry and I guess Souls a little bit. I know obviously every game gets compared to Souls, but this is the first game in Assassin's Creed ever that's had hitboxes, I believe. Mm-hmm. Like they overhauled the combat, so now when you hit somebody, you're actually hitting somebody. It's not this weird like dancing mini game that you'd have to do in the previous ones.
Yeah,
I want more games with dancing mini games though.
I think there should be
the
more dancing.
South Park has a good one of those.
That's true.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I really like the music in the strip club in that side.
Me
note.
Too.
Alana, we're talking about Assassin's Creed.
No, we're talking about anything. Ubisoft.
God damn it!
That guy not be.
No, I mean they made an open world RPG out of what previously was like
it
an
is
open world
absolutely
action
an RPG.
Yeah, and they said that was sort of their goal from the get go in terms of level progression. It feels like an RPG in terms of quest structure. It feels like an RPG.
And you look at like historically, like no pun intended, Assassin's Creed games are like here's a famous city, and it's like Egypt. I'm like that's not a city, and you're like oh crap, that's right. This is a land. Like yeah. This is an entire like area to explore. And I mean,
even then it's a lot more than just Egypt, and it deals with a lot of different cultures. Like I think I'm trying so hard to think about what I can say. One of the things I really like about it is that every place that you go to in it feels like a different culture with a different hierarchy and a political structure and a social structure, and there's like different facets of racism and different ways that he is treated for being an Egyptian. And it's like it's a big game.
Well, and Ubisoft has always had sort of a historical rock star team behind it of like, you know, trying to do their research. And with this year, especially even with Assassin's Creed Discovery coming out at the beginning of next year, that lets you sort of take in the game as a museum. Like it really does. I've never been to Egypt, but everything about this, when I was like, how do you turn Egypt into an interesting playground? I'm like, oh, I get it now.
So, full disclosure, I haven't really screwed with any of the missions in this.
This is really funny. This gameplay is a person clearly fighting someone who is way too high level. Yeah. And they're just like, how are you going to do this, buddy? Like, this isn't... Yep. Wow.
But no, like, it's... I haven't screwed with the missions too much. Like, it's very much like I'm just running around and I don't know, like, killing hippopotamuses and so forth. But...
Hippopotami.
It has...
Hippopotamini.
No, like...
That doesn't matter.
It's...
I think that I like the side quests more than most open world RPGs.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah, multifaceted.
That's good to hear.
And have several steps and characters that are more memorable than some games' main campaigns, I think.
That's good to hear. I mean, that was the thing that reminded me of Witcher was messing with that and just sort of actually.
Absolutely. Feeling, it's like. Yeah. It does like Witcher.
They've always put their like educational foot forward. And I've always said that like it feels like different types of field trips. Like Far Cry feels like one of those ones where they're like, hey, this is what the educational reason that we're here, but really, oh, screw it, just go have fun. And then Assassin's Creed was like, if you separate yourself from the tour, you will be on in-school suspension, and you're going to be in trouble. And it's like, that's not fun. Like, let me have fun.
Right.
And it's good that they're having this whole educational side of things, because it's like, people do love to dig into the history and everything, but I hate when that sort of like, that kind of guides the hand of how you actually play the game.
Yeah. One of my least favorite parts about previous AC games, like, I think it was mostly introduced in AC3, was they would auto-fail stealth missions, and they would also... give you a direct like incentive to do something. So it would be like extra XP, or it would just be like a notification to be like, kill this person this way. And I hated that stuff. And like this like does away with that. And I think I've kind of been comparing it a little bit to Phantom Pain, in that when you play that, you leave and you have a story about how you did a certain thing. And I think like everyone's story is going to be super, super different. And I think that Origins is going to be the same as that. Like the biggest comparisons I've heard from the people who played through it have been Phantom Pain and Witcher.
Yeah.
And
which is good.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it's from the preview event, like it does a really good job of, I don't know, a similar thing as Destiny or Shadow of War, where everything you do, it feels like you're slowly making progress towards the next thing. Like it's hard to put down because you got this new sword and it powers you up a little bit, or you killed a bunch of animals and you skinned them, and all of a sudden you have almost enough resources to, you know, upgrade your health or upgrade your strength. And there's always a ton of side quests and missions that you have, you know, currently pending. And you're like, oh, I'm 40 yards away to start this thing, and if I do that, maybe I'll get enough XP to level up, which allows me to do this thing.
I'm gonna say I don't super agree with that, but I don't think I can say why. Review embargo is
well, that means I win the argument.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well,
Alana's rebuttal is embargoed.
It is.
Thanks, Alana. No, it's. I mean, I think it's. Can you make a face to describe sort of how you're feeling about the game?
People love.
I really,
the space,
really,
audio
really like
podcast.
This game.
Cool. Well, that's
I
good.
Really, really like it.
Good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I'm usually a Far Cry guy first. I was sort of like nonplussed by the fact that it's set in Montana, but I think I'm warming up to that, but that's still a ways off. And I think, like, I don't know, Egypt is enough of like an interesting place that I want to jump back in. I'm one of those guys who just...
It's just, and there's so many places you go to that I just... It's just so rich in culture. Like, it's incredible. Like, you go to a place and you're like, this culture exists. These people worship this god and care about this thing.
Wow.
This is what drives this city. This is what drives the prophets in this city. Mm. This is what the people in this city do in their spare time. And they're all unique in that. And I just think that's so cool. Like,
and then you kill them all.
Yeah. And there's
you don't, though. You make friends with them. Like, it's, well, I mean.
I killed a lot of people in that Let's Play. If you accidentally kill a civilian, a thing props up that says, like, that's not what you did.
Bayek, yeah. It's just, it's a real delight to explore, but the gameplay that we're watching right now, if you're watching the video version, is actually my favorite things in the entire game, which is the garrisons, where you're just taking out an entire camp full of people.
You mean those, the Far Cry outposts?
The Far Cry outposts. Yeah. That's what I keep calling them.
Yeah. You watched Marty do one of those very, very sloppily before.
Oh, I do them
really fun.
I have been doing them very, very slowly. So it's like,
that's probably not great for a Let's Play. That's why I went sloppy.
Just really like any game where you can just mess up a bunch of dudes by releasing animals is great. I think it's good. So, I think it's a good mechanic and I love it.
I tried to do that multiple times, but then the animal would just come after me and then they would all be alerted to my presence. I was like, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to free this lion and then I'm going to run away and the lion's going to attack them and then the lion's like, and just chases me the whole time. I'm like, that's not what I wanted.
I liked it in there.
For a really long time, I tried to free the animals from the camp. So I was like, I'll help you, buddy. And then they just kill me. I'm like, damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we handled that very differently.
Yeah.
And that is out. This game is out this week, Friday.
It's out on Friday. Yeah. Review is up Thursday. We have a stream.
It's already up.
That will already be up, so the VOD will be up on youtube.com/IGN, which is also like this weird review in progress thing, so we can talk about stuff that I think it'll be way easier for me to talk about stuff that we're physically seeing instead of talking about the game as a whole. But for the most part, I think people should be super excited about it.
Are there any dragons?
I did not see any dragons.
An alligator is like a river dragon.
Some of those alligators are real mean, too. There's one that's white.
Yeah.
With red eyes.
Yeah, they love doing it. They love, like,
in the game or, like, in real life?
In the game.
Okay.
They have one of those at the Academy of Sciences. And
also, maybe real life.
Yeah. I've never tried to fight it.
I don't like that. I know that one. He always looks fake, and then he moves, and then
you're what?
Like, that's real.
There's an albino alligator at the Academy of Sciences, and it actually sucks. It sucks.
Oh.
Really, it's awful.
Not a fan of him?
We hate it.
Gross.
It looks like
he's made a bird poop.
Do you guys want to leave it like a Yelp review?
Big candle.
I would love to Yelp review that.
My Academy of Sciences actually directed at your one alligator. Yeah. It's albino.
That'd be great if each famous animal had their own Yelp page so we can give it like 3 out of 4 stars, like, but it spit in my food.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's like a candle.
Okay. Anyway.
He looked at my wife.
And we review that lion they show at the beginning of some movies. Who doesn't have legs?
They've actually used like 7 lions over the last century. They keep dying.
Oh,
they
really?
Retape them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because it's been like 100 years.
Yeah. So Lego Dimensions is canceled forever. That's it. That's over.
Wow.
I don't know. I'm sorry about it. They don't. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, this sucks.
Yeah. So they posted this wonderful, just this weird sort of depressing JPEG. That just said, Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment, TT Games, and the LEGO Group would like to thank fans for their ongoing support of LEGO Dimensions. After careful consideration, we will not be producing new expansion packs for the game beyond what is now available. We will continue to provide ongoing server and customer support for all LEGO Dimensions packs. Existing packs will continue to work interchangeably and will remain available for purchase.
So all of the Toys to Life are officially dead, right? Except for Amiibo?
Except for Amiibo, yeah.
But then we still have people trying to do those because we have Starlink coming from Ubisoft, which is, I think, they revealed during their conference.
No Man's Skylanders?
No Man's Skylanders.
I would be very surprised if that actually came out.
I would be too, yeah.
I think that's just the most, like, why would you do this in this day and age? Like, that feels very much like Ubisoft doing their usual, like, let's jump on launch titles. Do we have time to do Toys to Life for Switch? No. Oh, all right. Well, it's just shipped for years.
It feels like they did a lot of R&D back when it seemed like LEGO Dimensions and Skylanders.
Because Skylanders did so well around Giants, and it's like they all tried to dump on that, and it just didn't really work. And the thing is, like, LEGO Dimensions games as games, I really, really enjoyed.
Right.
I hated moving the stuff around.
Yeah.
I hated having to be like,
and some of those puzzles were really bad. Yeah.
And I'd be like, I have to get up again. Like, just stop. Yeah. Just let me play the game.
The biggest FU about those game about those Toys to Life is that the actual packs don't come with instructions. You got to like go online and download PDFs.
Or sometimes, it's in the game.
Which is like, I feel like you really missed the point there. Because like with Skylanders or with Amiibo or with, you know, Disney Infinity, rest in peace, God bless. You know, you had like the toy and that was it. And maybe if you didn't have the game, it was fine. Like maybe you'd play it with like a mobile version. But like in this case, it's LEGO. You still need to build the toy. Why would you have to bury it? Like, it's just, I don't know. I think that was such a huge swing.
Yeah, all of this is very odd because it's like, I mean, I really like what they've done, but the last few years, post the Lego movie and Lego Batman, they banked really hard on like dudes in their 40s. Like, it was like Beetlejuice, A-Team, E.T., Gremlins.
It's true.
Like, that stuff that's just like, I caught like, I'm in my mid-30s. I caught the tail end of that stuff growing up. Like, that was sort of right around my era. People, like, slightly older than me who lived down the street were really big into stuff like that and sort of handed down to me. But it didn't really pay off, right? I think the logic there was, like, a lot of guys in their 40s were connecting with their children playing video games for the first time, and they were going to go to the store and buy all these little kits. I would have rather just gotten a bunch of Lego games rather than, like, or a bunch of Lego sets. I don't ever see the point in connecting them all. Like, I love the kits that they've made, right? I love the sort of like in celebration or, you know, in mourning of the ending of Lego Dimensions here. I just built the A-Team van at my desk because Jonathan Dornbush had it sitting underneath his desk. And I was like, this is a cool kit. This is awesome. I don't ever want to scan this into a video game.
Yeah.
I have no need to play this as a video game, but I like this as its own thing. Yeah. So
also, Lego Dimensions, like, as a video game, the idea that you can have a bunch of different characters from different worlds doing the same thing is a great concept.
Yeah,
it's just
totally.
That you have to buy them. And it was often really obnoxious about it. Like, you would have to get the Wicked Witch. And it would, like, if you didn't have her, you'd be like, she is needed to get to this area. But I feel like they always shield it for the characters who would be the least popular.
Yeah.
So just reminded it was physical DLC. I honestly think in this case, I would have been more okay with it being microtransaction based. Like, specific case, it would have been like different character in this dumb world. Sure.
Look at a game like Lego Marvel Super Heroes or Lego, you know, Lego Batman, whatever, where it's got a roster of like 140 people. But then imagine that, like, I don't know, five of them are the Goonies. And then there's E.T. and Slimer and, like, you know, Doc Brown and stuff. And it's all these characters who maybe couldn't support an entire game on their own. Like, if Lego Dimensions had just been that, just been Lego Dimensions, and it was a catch-all for all these weird different IPs mashed together.
Yeah. You could buy a pack of a different IP without having to go to a store or wait for it to be shipped to you and then move it around a surface. Like, I would have been
so
really
cool. Yeah, I'm really curious. So this is, I feel like we have the fewest amount of Lego games on the horizon now because this is winding down, and then we have Lego Avengers 2 or Lego Marvel 3 or whatever it's coming out.
We're getting a new Star Wars movie in 2 months, and we have no word on if there's a new Lego Star Wars
movie. Yeah.
I know we found out about Lego Force Awakens very, very, very late. Right. That was an awesome surprise. Like, I think it was like in August one day.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's happening this year.
That's also the weird disconnect between Lucas and Disney and Marvel and Disney and WB Games being the publisher.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And then there's the whole added element of Fox owning half the Marvel properties. So Lego Marvel Heroes 2 looks like it's going to be less of a roster than we got with the first game.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be – I asked Arthur Parsons at D3, like, hey, yo, where are the X-Men? Get those X-Men out here. And he's
So this sucks for toys. This sucks for toys to life games. This sucks for Lego games.
It sucks for life.
It sucks for Star Wars too, because it's like there's another on top of the Star Wars stuff from before. It's all not great. I mean, and Amiibo is doing well because I think it's weird because there is no dedicated Amiibo game, right? There's like that Animal Crossing Amiibo, whatever that is. It's not great. But the value of those toys is that they do work across multiple IPs and multiple systems and multiple things. They work on 3DS. They work on Wii U and Switch. And they work in Breath of the Wild. They work in Mario Kart. Like, you can take one toy and apply it to a bunch of different things and get some value out of it. It's also a lot of the times we've ever seen a lot of those figures in toy form.
Exactly.
For the first time.
That's like a big part of why it appealed to me initially.
Definitely. Because, I mean, where else are you going to get a Waluigi? But this thing, like, if you can't sell Star Wars toys, Disney toys, and Lego, there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think Toys to Life is a viable business for anyone, and I don't think we're ever going to see games like
that
again.
Well, I think it was also this interesting sort of generational intersection of people older who have the kids who are like, I love toys. I grew up with toys. Toys are great. And then there's a whole generation of kids who maybe they want to just play games, you know? Mm-hmm. And I can't speak to that. I don't have kids. I don't know the market research on that. But, like, I don't know. We're seeing... Star Wars collecting is weird right now. Like, the Star Wars action figures are like, they've got this weird like NFC chip thing going on with them, and it's like
Toys R Us just filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Maybe it's just not great for toys.
The giraffe is sick.
Yeah,
the giraffe has a cough.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time to get a cough out of a giraffe's neck.
Man, I was gonna go. He's got a very long sore throat. Anyway, so. Yeah.
We had an interesting question.
Kieran J. Fricker Goddard said, would you like to see PlayStation do their own take on Amiibo? This is a really interesting thing. You look at every other Toys to Life thing aside from Amiibo, and they all had a pedestal, like whether it was the Portal or the Skylanders thing or the thing you had to plug in, the separate peripheral to make these things come to life. Whereas Nintendo is like, we just have NFC support on our devices.
Right.
It's there. It's fine. So, like, let's pretend that, I don't know, PlayStation has, like, a built-in chip reader or whatever. What would that look like?
No. It's so hard to imagine for PlayStation.
Yeah. Like, I think it would be really cool to be able to buy, like, you know, amiibo quality toys that look like PlayStation characters, that look like, you know, Ratchet and look like Sly. And I mean, look
just
like
just today,
Sackboy.
Funko showed off they're doing a new line of, like, and I'm not crazy about what they're working on, but it's a new line of, like, sort of blind boxed figurines that are based on a lot of the human specifically only the human characters in that game.
They got dinosaurs too, just not enough of them.
Yeah, exactly. So, but they're not, they don't really have the added value of being something you'd want to display on your shelf and also right. being something that works across multiple games, which I think Amiibo does well. That said, I think there's a market there for something, because in the same way we were talking about Nintendo stuff, we've never seen a lot of these things merchandised in mm-hmm. scale before. So it'd be cool to see that.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't have a little Parappa figurine. Like, they're like Happy Meal toys, and there's yeah. you have to get like obscure stuff from the 90s, and like there's a you know, a Nathan Drake NECA figure, but there isn't really a ton of stuff in that scale. Yeah. There isn't like a cute Joel and Ellie in an awesome pose that's like
so
12 in, you know, 12 bucks.
The thing about Amiibo and also Disney Infinity is that they made those lines, like, even with different characters, look like they belong together.
Sure.
Like,
yes.
Disney Infinity had a huge struggle where they would be like, okay, we have to take this character that is, like, hugely important to this brand. It's Star Wars. We can't screw it up. They have to approve of it. But we also need to give it that blocky look like the rest of our line. So when you put it on a table, it looks good together.
Yeah.
I think that would be super hard for PlayStation. I think, like, getting all of the vastly different heroes, like, how do you get, like, someone like Ellie and then Nathan Drake and then Crash Bandicoot?
Look at,
them
I mean,
all
the like thing is, look at PlayStation All-Stars, yeah. right? Like, I think that's exactly. the closest we've ever come to them attempting that.
Put Sackboy in there. It's just, like, it just looks it's just, so
different.
Yeah,
it doesn't different.
Mesh. Yeah. The thing is, it mashes in Smash Brothers. Like, somehow they found a way to have Bayonetta and Cloud look normal next to Kirby and Jigglypuff,
yeah.
Where it never felt like having Sweet Tooth in PlayStation All-Stars, you know, next to Jack, next to Rhett. Like, it all felt weird. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that's because we've been playing Smash Brothers games for 20 years and we're like...
It's an interesting point because, like, you know, Ike is, like, a completely different character to Bayonetta, but I'm yeah. fine with them being together.
Totally.
Right. I don't know why, but the fact that I don't know why means that they've done a damn good job of
yeah,
making
totally.
Them
Nintendo
good
has their Nintendo's Nintendo, you know, and like I love Sony stuff, but they don't have the same, like, you know, iconic brands. Like, they don't have, like, the same... You show Parappa side by side with Mario and to anybody on the street, and you're like, who is who, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you look at Nathan Drake.
Who's a thug dog?
You know?
I mean, Crash is like, I would consider Crash to be pretty iconic, but at the same time, it's still like Crash, Nathan Drake. Like, how do you make yeah. a line out of
well,
that?
Well, then that's half an Activision thing anyway.
Like, that's mm-hmm. true.
You know, like, mm-hmm. wasn't there rumors of getting like an Xbox One version yeah. of Crash Remastered?
Yeah.
I mean, I just want more PlayStation merchandise in general. I want more toys, action figures, plushies,
yeah,
like, cool stuff like that, you know? We just don't get enough of it. There's some stuff pops up on their official store every now and then.
Oh, collector's editions. Like, yeah. Last of Us had a good one. I'm sure Part 2 will have a good one as well. But, like, I have a Nathan Drake action figure, which is the NECA one. Oh, no, it's not. It's a 6-scale one that's not the NECA one. Like, it's right. really good, and I really like it, but it's, like, the only one that I had found.
And the statue they did for Horizon is gorgeous. You know, yeah. like, that thing's really nice. It's, like, this big light-up dinosaur robot.
Yeah, but they're still yeah. not toys, though. You know, yeah. They're, like, big statues. It's
mm-hmm.
give me some toys. All right, so one game I wish did have toys, just a quick shout out, Night in the Woods is coming to mobile. This is out on PSN already. It was supposed to come to Vita at one point. I think that probably got the plug pulled on it. I just finished this game. It's definitely one of my top 5 games of the year. It's so
it's really good.
I mean, it's totally like a walking simulator platformer kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you go around, you talk to people, and it's got this kind of adventure gamey quality to it, but as far as it being like top to bottom, like a game where you have the objective and
you don't like die, right?
No, there's places where you can screw up kind of, but it's mostly like an interactive story. It feels very like pop-up bookish, which I love. It reminds me of like a very, very real kind of close to home Richard Scarry book. Like those old, like, you know, like Huckle Cat and Lowly Worm, and they're hanging yeah. out in this small town. It was like, what do people do all day? I was like, all right, well, what do people do all day in like a depressing, like, coal mining town?
Does it have voice acting?
No, it doesn't, which is nice because you make up the own voices in your head.
I feel like we're just a few months away from this being on PlayStation Plus. Like, that's, I keep being written, I hate doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I keep being like, I'm gonna buy this, but this just feels like a PS Plus yeah. game mm-hmm. so hard. So
yeah.
I hope
yeah,
that
I think you're right.
I think also it's perfect on mobile. I would say for playing it on console, it was like a little bit too long for my taste. I think I forget how long it took me. I want to say it was I want to say it was 8 hours. I also played over the course of the year, basically. But it's got a substantial story. It's got a lot of like.
The dialogue's just great and very
it's
real.
So good. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. It reminds me of like Daniel Clowes, like Ghost World type of stuff.
Yeah, I've heard that like as opposed to something like Life is Strange, this really does like capture. How, I mean, granted, they're all like cats and animals, but it captures how like teenagers or people in their early 20s talk. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Super cool. So go check that out either on mobile or on PS4, whatever. Let's talk about some of the big games this week. There are a bunch of them. We talked about Assassin's Creed. We're not going to talk about Mario.
I want to talk about Mario. He has a hat.
I want to talk about Mario. I want to play Mario.
He throws a hat at the men. Yeah. When he throws the hat, he becomes the men.
Yeah, he's like a demon.
Yeah.
Has anybody done like a thing yet where they're trying to exorcize somebody that's just wearing the Mario hat?
The power of Christ.
Just the exorcist.
Apparently he doesn't possess them. I mean, this is not neither here nor there.
Not here nor
there.
Right.
Is the official terminology.
Still like weird. CAP. You know what my theory is that Mario's been captured for quite a while. That someone threw the hat at Mario in like
mid-80s.
Yeah, there's
a really good Reddit thread about that, about how he took over someone's life.
Yeah, that's so that terrifying. It hasn't been Mario the whole
gets
time.
Resurrected.
It's actually been curse.
It was Luigi put it on him back in Super Mario Bros.
Anyway, one game that's coming out this week that is for the PlayStation family of systems is Wolfenstein 2. Joe Cartwright in the Facebook group says, "Beyond, how do you think Wolfenstein will be received critically and commercially? Its release is coinciding with major issues in our country, and Bethesda has claimed their side regarding the Wolfenstein Instagram post. Will killing Nazis in this game feel all too real and draw people away, or people run toward this game now more than ever?"
That's not a side.
You know what? I think that this game is going to sell just as well regardless of the fact that it has Nazis in it. I think that like people are going to be like, this is a shooter that looks cool, and I think most people will not think about it that hard.
Right. I mean, it's got like aging syphilitic Hitler and robot dogs that you can ride around on.
The first one is great. Like, I'm so excited about this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't wait to play it.
I mean, this franchise has been doing the same exact thing since its inception. And that's not to say it's repetitive or boring or out of ideas, but this is the core thesis of that game that has never changed. It is not different this year than it was in 1981 or whatever. And so that's not different now. And so that's okay. Maybe you're different now. Maybe you like the bad guys.
There was this
now.
Really good thing on our live show at E3 where this is like totally not going to be a completely accurate quote, but Lucy said something along the lines of like, so when you're like, murdering or killing enemies, and he was like, no, what you do is you kill Nazis. Yeah. He like corrected her for it, and like, that's just the best thing ever.
I love that.
Because that's the thesis of Wolfenstein, is killing Nazis.
Yeah. Right, they're very bad.
There was a thing on the internet for a minute, there was Godwin's Law, which is inevitably somebody will compare something to Hitler as being the pinnacle of bad hyperbole. Like,
right.
This is worse than Hitler, you know, and now we're at a point where we're like, hold on a second. So
it's so insane that that's a hard thing to say. But basically, to answer the question, based on what I've played, I assume it'll be received well critically because I like absolutely love the tiny demo that I played. Mm-hmm. And I love the first one, and I'm really excited about this game. And I think for most people, it won't matter that there are Nazis in it.
Yeah. I did an interview with the lead writer at Gamescom, just to look up, you know, IGN, Wolfenstein 2, Gamescom. It's something that I went from being like, I get it, like, this is goofy, this is fun, like, you get to kill robot Nazis and stuff like that, to being like, oh, this game has a ton of heart.
Absolutely.
This is an interesting character.
Did you play The New Order?
Yes.
Because that game's like I that really resonated with me emotionally. And even the preview that I played of The New Order was just like, oh, this is like about a guy who is now crippled being heavily emasculated and being mocked for being not the idea of an American icon. And like, this is like, it's way deeper. Than
we spent a lot of the 90s sort of like giving classic games credit for modernizing in the way Mario 64 and Ocarina of Time became 3D games for the first time and just really revolutionized what they were to begin with. But I don't think we've really stopped to look at the last few years, especially with stuff like Doom and with, you know, with Wolfenstein, to sort of go like, the roots of this game are very simplistic and rudimentary, but to take it and modernize it and give it so much heart and so much sort of like profound depth and wit and spirit is something I don't think we critically praise enough as we should.
I love what the new one's doing also, in that it's aesthetically really kind of jerking the wheel. It's like in the 60s now, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very colorful.
It's in America.
It seems like very like it's moving things forward. It's not just kind of returning to that same like weird, like, sort of cyberpunk Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of vibe it had going before. Like, the first one I thought was cool, but it did have a lot of, like, there was a lot of kind of gray, muddied castles, and I was like, this feels like a modernized version of the last thing we played.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool how it managed to be, like, yeah, you cut holes and stuff with a laser gun. That was kind of like the weird, like, mechanic.
The laser craft work.
Right.
Yeah. The craft.
But also, you just shot stuff. Like, it was cool. You just shot stuff with guns. And it was like, they got that right. And you don't necessarily need to, like, screw it up and add a bunch of, like...
Well, the first 45 minutes of the last Wolfenstein game feels
so the last one's the New Order, the new one's the New Colossus. I keep screwing that up.
I've been calling them the First Order.
We just call it one and two. Yeah.
But the first 45 minutes of the last game feels like the sort of like the derivative spiritual successor to the one that you'd expect. And it's just this boring, bland, gray military shooter. And then it rips everything wide open and flips everything upside down.
Mm-hmm. There's stealth sequences, there's puzzle sequences. Yep. Like, it's
and also to tie this back into the beginning of the show, like, if you want companies to keep making, you know, AAA budget single player games, Bethesda's doing that.
Yeah.
Bethesda has Dishonored and Prey and this. And I mean, well, Doom has multiplayer, but we need to talk about Snack
Maps.
Still
technically a single
player. Most of it's single player, yeah. And so Bethesda's one of those people who are sort of carrying that torch.
Yeah.
I got some news for you. Bethesda is not one of those people. Bethesda is a large company that hires.
No. Hillary Bethesda. Hillary Bethesda of Bethesda, Maryland has been single-handedly making all these video games.
Good to know.
That's why the backlash is happening.
Yeah. So anyway,
the emails.
Yeah. But no, I think Wolfenstein. It looks psychedelic, which I'm excited about. Like, it looks very colorful and strange, and I like. I always like that kind of, like, hey, let's check out weird remixed alternate history, but I think if you stay in the same time frame. I mean, this is what I wish BioShock had gotten a chance to do more of.
Yeah.
Like, it sucks that there are three BioShock games and two of them are in the same setting. Like, the whole idea of being like, I want to see this crazy remix of this setting, you know? And I think that Wolfenstein, like, I don't know.
And they did Burial at Sea as well. They're like,
it just kept going. Just make a new one. I know it's very Rapture's difficult very cool, to make though. The thing, but...
But the first two games could have been called Burial at Sea.
Well, yeah, especially the second one.
Yeah, but I mean, Wolfenstein 3, assuming we get that, I love the idea of it being like, oh, it's suddenly the 80s. Like, here's what, like, I don't know, like...
What Ray, as Ronald Reagan was the hero
the
who brought us
Reagan
back.
Youth.
Like, I mean, I guess it's like a different take on the way they approach Fallout. Like, let's just pick this up, this basic concept of a different history, and put it in a different time frame and put it in a different city.
Also, we were talking about Fallout in the office. What they got to set that game somewhere that's not America. Next Fallout just got to be like, what's going on in Asia?
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they keep making a bunch of Wolfensteins. I'm down with that.
Yeah.
And then make one that's like modern and it's like fantastical and there's like Nazis like now. That'd be crazy.
That would never happen.
No, see, that's the thing.
I would never.
I'm super down with Wolfenstein jumping around all over the world. I think Fallout, much like GTA, is like so sort of weirdly tied to the American dream as a concept that it doesn't work outside of that.
I agree.
Yeah.
On Fallout especially, like, that is exactly what it is rooted in. But I think, like, they could just be like, well, the whole world was rooted in that same culture at that point in time. Like, they can do whatever they want with it.
Maybe Russia. Like, you could also do, I don't know, you could also do Wolfenstein in Russia. Anyway, some other big stuff coming out this week. There is, and we're not doing this to be goofy like we usually do. We got some other ones to talk about for that. The Mummy Demastered.
I'm super excited about this, actually.
Me too. Yeah. Hit Tom Cruise from The Mummy.
So that movie was a real sucker. So don't pretend that this game is based off that. But this is
the movie was a sucker.
It was a real sucker. But this is Way Forward, who's done just an incredible work on a ton of 2D sort of pixel based platformers, interesting games like the Alien Infestation.
Yep, they've done a Contra game.
Yeah,
they do all the Shantae games, which were super fun. They did a 2D Blood Rain, which was like 16-bit. Also demastered. I don't think that's the best word. I think that's like a cute word we throw around like on podcasts. I don't think calling anything The Mummy is great right now, or calling anything demastered is just not a good buy-in term. That said, this looks really, really
the pixel work is so gorgeous if you see the trailer for this.
I wish that I didn't know it was tied to this movie that
I really thought they were just like, make a mummy game and maybe if the movie does well we'll sell more copies, and it didn't, and so
I haven't seen that movie. I plan to never see that movie. I mean, I fly a lot, so I probably will someday.
Movie,
you know, that's an airplane movie right there.
Have a bunch of wines and watch Mummy.
Yeah, you're gonna drink a lot of wine and watch Mummy.
But I'm gonna pretend this game is like a Castlevania game with guns.
Yeah,
that's how it looks. I mean, it is a Metroidvania sort of non-linear exploration based 2D pixel platform action game. Buzzwords! And so I'm super excited for it.
You to say that sentence.
All those words right there?
Yeah.
I get paid per word. So like probably like 8 or 9 cent.
Good job. Yeah. Nailed it.
Do a penny per word.
I got a $20 mummy gift card.
That's right.
To find folks at the mummy.
All you can do with it is watch that film on an airplane.
That's right, twice.
It's the only use for the credit.
You can buy that movie twice.
You know how bad you got to screw up to make a movie about mummies that I don't want to see?
I have a total weird theory about this
game. I love them.
My theory was that this started as a Blood Rain 2D sequel. And someone somewhere was like, attach this license to it. It's going to be the biggest movie of the year. Universal is making monsters again. And they got a whole cinematic universe. The Wolfman's here, and the Mummy's here, and Frankenstinio, all those boys. And it's going to be great.
Frankenstinio.
I like how this is like Brian Altano's The Mummy Lore Corner. And this week we're talking about The Mummy Demastered.
It's called The Mummy Unwrapped, and that's the name of my corner. Thank you very much. And find out what's underneath those old robes and tarps.
Another game came out this week that I got a chance to play for just a second.
I have to stop talking about the mummy now?
I really want to talk about mummies. I could talk about mummies for like 45 minutes.
This is called Arab Mummies of the Old.
A little bit tuckered out after
Let's
that.
Let's do it later on. We'll hang out. We'll get, you know, talk about the...
Yeah, you guys are allowed to talk outside this room.
I spent like $85 on mummy toys this year. They're
it's great. People plus toilet paper. You can't go wrong.
Yeah, it's great. It's very cheap.
And treasures.
You, if you want to really kick it up a notch, you can get gauze.
That's right.
You know what else has mummies? Assassin's Creed Origins.
What?
What?
How is that an embargo?
Do you fight him?
Anyway, another game that came out this week is called Air, Memories of Old. I checked this out this morning. It's indie game. Basically, it's to be reductive and just compare it to things that are, you know, everyone has a frame of reference for. It feels like a cross between Journey and Skyward Sword, but there's no combat. Basically.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, so it's very low poly, colorful aesthetic. It's you've got these sort of, I don't know, like these tablets you've
scarves?
Got to go around and read.
Oh.
There's no scarves. You do turn into a bird, though. Cool. You can transform into a bird. You fly around these floating islands, and you're supposed to just kind of go around and talk to people and explore it. It's like that's what kind of hooked me, was that this is just sort of exploration-based. So if you could have sort of almost like a, I don't know, like an open-world journey type game that's out
that
there,
cool.
I feel
it's
so bad.
It's spelled A-E-R, right?
A-E-R, yeah.
Okay, or,
I feel so bad for this game coming out this week.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's...
Who could have known, though, that there were these games... Who would have known?
Yeah, they just don't advertise it.
Yeah,
yeah.
On the other hand, now I said that we would not be talking about some of the games as goofs, but here's the one we're going to be goofing about: Stunt Kite Masters PSVR. Fly the kite, master the stunts, kite the VR.
I wrote that part. That's not really there.
Oh damn!
That's not. No one ever said kite the VR.
Oh, I really wanted that though.
So
you really put anything in there, and Max will read it.
I will. That's true. But no, it's
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Hey man, they put out a game about kites. Like,
there's also a new fishing game on PSVR, I think, this week.
Oh yeah, that's called like Fishing Master. There's also
Fishing
a
Master VR
one or whatever.
Yeah.
I would actually really like just an enjoyable, regular, non-stunted kite game where you could just kind of be on the beach after like a hard breakup and just fly that kite up in the air. You could put
that's
a box
that
fan
seems
in
like
front of
such
you at
a
home.
Sad thing to do after a breakup.
I think it'd be great. You put a box fan in underneath your TV and you sit there and you just fly that kite up there and with a VR hat on and just.
That sounds all right.
Yeah. So anyway, this leads to a good
question.
Anyway,
you okay?
No, I'm great. Yeah, I'm talking for other people that need that. like a therapy kite.
Good God. Glenn Paul.
I'm allowed
Thornhill.
To bring this into the restaurant. This is my therapy kite.
You cannot fly it in here, sir. This is the Olive Garden.
No. I have my therapy kite.
You bring it on an airplane and fly it, put it out the window.
I don't think they let you
that.
You can run up and down the aisles, though, and if anyone gives you trouble, say that you let the baby on the plane. Let me fly my kite. Glenn Paul Gledhill says, what innovation/changes would you like to see out of a potential revision of the PSVR that ideally wouldn't phase out the old models? This is a good question.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It wouldn't phase out the old models?
Right.
That's the
I really
part.
Feel like you can't modularize like the old models.
Yeah.
Like, we want wireless. We're getting the easy HDR pass-through for, you know, if you have a PS4 Pro, but that... In theory, phases. Brian can't fix his. You can't fix yours for that.
I'd love to see, and this is sort of like we're getting with the updated version that where the headphones are sort of baked into the actual device. I'd love it if they just put out some kind of like a special clip or something, or like some kind of little doohickey you can make so the headphones don't just get ripped out of your ears constantly by moving your arms about like a
I have Oculus at home and I like that the most about Oculus is that it has it built on.
I hate those little dog ears on the Oculus. I know you can use other ones too.
I really wish
you can clip other ones on.
Yeah, those are good. I wish someone would make a VR system that you could see through, so like you could hit a button and be like, I'm not blind anymore.
Huh.
Like, imagine just being able to be like...
Yeah, it would need to be a camera.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Vive is kind of close for that and that it maps out...
It's the closest.
Kind of, but yeah, I feel like that wouldn't be that hard.
They have that with Google Glass or something. Google, like it was the Samsung Gear, because it's just a phone and has a front and back facing camera.
Right.
And it's kind of nice to be like, hey, when you're not in the middle of this game, like, here's what the world around you looks like. It's weird and garbled, and it's a screen in front of your face, but you can still see where you are.
And then obviously we need an update for the controllers, which have been around since 2010.
That's the most important thing for me, I think. It's like the Move controllers are so outdated, and even back with iToy, they weren't very good, and they're still not very good, and still make a lot of games janky, and they kind of make adventure games and PSVR hard to play. So
it is so weird to sit down and put this futuristic, incredible, revolutionary headset on, and then pull out these controllers from literally 7 years ago or 6 years ago. Like, it just feels so weird to me.
It'd be like making a PSVR game where you have to pull out your Wonder Book.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Or like you have like a flying car, but the tires are square.
Yeah. Or if you have a kite game that doesn't come with the fan for you to be able to play
it. That would be ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, to be able for you to go through your divorce.
The nerve of these people. There's one game I'm dying to check out. I just haven't had a chance to jump into it, called Megaton Rainfall, I think this is called. Might be mixed up with
Project it's where you're like a superhero. Megaton Rainfall. Yeah.
Someone described it as, it's like your Goku fighting Earth Defense Force aliens, otherwise known as just large bugs. But that sounds like fun. That sounds like a good time. I'll go check that out. But people are saying that's a fun time with games. Did I screw around with something in VR recently? I feel like I did.
Was it the kite? Was it?
Kite? We talked about this. There's a huge sale on VR games.
Right.
I jumped on there. I think I dropped $20 and walked away with like six games or something, which is cool. Some of them are super cheap. I finally checked out the PlayStation Worlds VR, whatever, which was effectively the pack-in. If you never jumped on this, and you can grab it for like $6. It's awesome. It's probably the highest quality VR stuff that the PSVR has for it. It sucks that they were selling that for like, I don't know, whatever full price was when it came out.
Seems really weird that wasn't just there.
Yeah.
That Wii Sports.
Yeah. Give you like a demo. It's like,
does that have the kitchen in it?
No, it doesn't, because that was a preview for Resident Evil 7.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that specific demo ever came out where the old lady puts the knife in your face.
Where is that then? Because
I played that was free.
I played that somewhere at launch.
I think it
does
Worlds.
Have the kitchen in it.
I think it's all Sony published stuff. It's like that. Mm. It's the Getaway London thing.
Getaway's in it.
The Deep Sea.
Yep.
Shark Lovers.
Yep. That London Heist thing. I'm not really big on the John Wick movies, but if they make a third one, they should throw some money at that team and just be like, hey, this is the John Wick VR experience.
Well there's one of those.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
They already made that. It's apparently like, I think they threw money at Crytek or something.
It's pretty bad.
Well, I had to play it once. I had to play it once at PAX, and it made me not have my glasses, and I just couldn't see anything. Yeah. And so I'm like, well, this isn't going to go well.
It was just not great anyway.
What if that was what John Wick 3 was like, where he lost his contacts?
The whole movie's blurry because it's in first person.
Yeah.
First they took my dog, then my house, then my contacts.
There it is. All right. So Halloween is next week, the spookiest time of the year.
Yeah.
So we figured we could talk about the best spooky game of 2017. Let us discuss amongst ourselves.
I think it is Resident Evil 7.
Yep. Hands down. Yeah, nice having you guys.
Me too. All right. Bye.
Yeah, that's
but I really love Friday the 13th too.
Yeah, you're the only one of us who's played a bunch of that, right?
We played some Friday.
We did.
13th.
Yeah.
I don't know why I stopped in the middle of
that.
That's not how you pronounce a colon.
We're good buds, so that's what I call it colloquially. Yeah, Friday and I hang out regularly.
Me and Fry, we hanging out. We cool.
I liked how silly that game was. I know there's a lot of problems with like it not getting patched or whatever, and having like a bunch of problems with like DLC or you know, like cosmetic
stuff.
Yeah,
server issues, but I love Friday the 13th.
I like that it's fundamentally janky, just like the Friday the 13th movies are. Mm-hmm. Like, it felt almost kind of true to form that, like, it would have these, like, goofy animations and things were just kind of
the game
wacky.
Feels like it takes place in a low-budget horror movie set, which I did.
I mean, it absolutely looks like Camp Crystal Lake.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing that I love about it is the idea that you, as a survivor, are just basically screwed. And so anytime that you win against Jason, it's just so satisfying. Mm-hmm. Like, if you haven't played this game, it's basically like you have to survive generally by escaping or going through this elaborate series of item pickups that will actually let you kill Jason, but it's super unlikely. And like, there's one thing you can do to make a character spawn who Jason can't see on his map when he like sinks to try and find. He can teleport. That's
if someone
too.
Stole his contacts, like John Wick.
That's exactly why. And you have to try and find walkie talkies in this campsite to talk to other campers to be like, hey, I found the car keys. Do you know where the fuel is? And then someone else has to be like, we're going to the red car at this location to try and get out. And then you have to try and escape or call the cops. And it's just like, it's very difficult and requires a ton of teamwork. And being Jason is super fun, but playing with a group of friends, I think, is the most fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think there's like a role play element to that really works in its favor. And when you play with like quiet people or you play with people who aren't really into
it, you have to be able to talk to each other.
Yeah, like you have to be scared teens screaming at each other.
Yeah.
Like that's what makes it really really fun.
Well, it's also it's very faithful adaptation in that, yeah, everyone loses. Like, it's kind of unbalanced, but that's the point, you know? Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, absolutely. It feels like a horror movie. Like, it really does. Like, until the one levels of a horror movie.
Yeah, I love that.
And the one time that I, like, was the only person to get away was because Jason was holding someone up in front of the car that I was driving and, like, about to choke them. And I was like, okay, well, I'll just try and drive around it. And I guess that I hit them. They died. So it was like I just ran over someone by the fact of him holding it in front of me. And his logic was like, if I hold this in front of you, you won't drive through. And I was like, not doing it. And then just drove out of the park. And he was like, well, I'm sorry, but I won.
I love it. Resident Evil 7 Biohazard. This is
first 2/3 of that game.
I think it's
I still think that if you gave me a piece of paper that I could draw the first two houses of that game perfectly. Mm-hmm. I think that the design is so good and so memorable. Like, it's right up until the boat and the salt mine stuff at the end. It's just such a good game.
I totally agree. I think, like, it falls apart at the end because of a big issue is level design towards the end and the lack of enemy variety. But you're totally right in that the beginning of this game, or the first 2/3 of this game, feel very real, and that's stupid to say about a game with nightmare mud people in it. But the way the house is designed feels like a real house. It is a tangible, lived-in space that is terrifying. It feels like walking into a house in the middle of the woods, which is what the game's about. I think in terms of the PSVR integration, it's hands down one of the most incredible video game experiences I've ever had, and I couldn't even stay in there long because I was a huge, wimpy baby boy.
Can't do that. It's also like some of the boss fights in it are just like already feel iconic, like the one in the garage is just awesome. And
I wish there was a version of this that wasn't too scary for me.
Actually, how much of it did you play?
Not like a little bit.
This part is scary.
This is very scary.
And then after this, it gets like it gets okay. It gets way more video gamey.
I'll jump back into it.
There are chase sequences, but like once you get past the start of it, is horror game.
Yeah.
Then it is Resident Evil.
See, that's
also
what,
if you if you upgrade your personal settings to not be a big chicken wimpy baby.
How do you upgrade personal settings? Is that a microtransaction?
You got to do the flex in the mirror every day, every morning.
Get a bravery loot box.
Surprise yourself. Look in the mirror and go, ooh, until you jump, and then when you stop.
If I dress like a ghost when I play the game, will it be less frightening? That's very – why would you look in that pot if there's a cockroach and there's a disgusting –
it'll scare the people you live with if they come home and see a ghost.
Yeah, maybe that's the trick.
Max, you did play a good scary game. You played Little Nightmares.
Yeah, that's not scary at all. Clearly, I'm a big wussy baby.
No, I think the last boss fight of that game was super creepy.
That game is it feels like being scared of stuff when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like in the same way that old, like, I don't know, you'd watch like a weird old
Spirited Away.
Yeah, 80s kids movie or something. It's got a lot of Spirited Away in it, but almost like there's a stop-motion Alice in Wonderland movie that was made by some insane Swedish woman a million years ago, and it's horrifying. It's really, really awful. And it's on YouTube. You should go check it out. But it's that same kind of like, I don't quite know what I'm looking at, and this is unsettling because of it.
Little Nightmares is disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
Like, in a way that's just like, a lot of the things you come across are repulsive, and the things that you do in that game are disgusting. And it's like, I think that makes it a horror game.
I also love that it's not, I think it's T-rated. Like, they don't actually, as opposed to something like Inside or Limbo, which you're like, oh, here's the little boy. Oh, he got his head cut off and we showed the guts.
Yeah, it's not that gory.
It was like, that was jarring the first few times. Then after a certain point, like, it's like, okay, well, you killed a child. That's awful. But in Little Nightmares, it's so...
You just kind of get yanked, right?
You'll
like,
get,
they just
like,
pick you up?
Yeah, you'll get, like, eaten by these people, but they just look like big cookie men. Like,
they don't,
look,
I don't think like, they show you being eaten.
They just look like Mayor McCheese or something. Like, they just come up and they're like...
Oh, really?
I want this just to be McDonald's Playland.
They are really gross.
Yeah, they're very, very creepy.
We also had Outlast 2 earlier this year, and I played about half of that, and... Yes, that game is scary, but I didn't particularly like it.
Mm.
And I think it's because it feels really disjointed. Mm. And it's also like the best thing I think about Resident Evil games and Resident Evil 7 is that every now and then you have a comfort space. You have a place that is safe. And then you leave that space, but you know that you can go back to it. And I think that like really makes everything else you do terrifying, whereas Outlast is just constant terror. Mm. And like at a certain point, when you don't have anything to ground you, it's like hard to... frame that, I think. And like that, I feel the same way about PT. When you get to the door, you have a second of comfort. Like, you're like, I'm opening the door, I'm okay for a second. Like, I know that I'm okay in this second. Like, it's usually until I get to that end corner, I will be okay. And I think that Outlast 2 not having that really bothered me. I just always felt on edge.
Mm-hmm.
Never had anything to bring me back.
I liked going into the safe rooms in Resident Evil 7 because even when like a mud monster was coming to the door, you just close it and they'd
be like, bye. And they'd be like, all right, yeah,
cute guitar music.
I'll give you some time. It's all right. They never take that away from you either.
Another game came out this year was Observer, which kind of went under some people's radar. This is this weird first-person cyberpunk horror game. You play as Rutger Hauer.
Oh, I saw you play that.
And it's really it's like sci-fi horror, so it's kind of interesting because it's immediately unfamiliar because you're in this like weird distant future. The attention to detail in terms of like technology and just the aesthetic is so good, like so on point. And then it turns into like this kind of like, I don't know, like it's like horror stuff. And I'm like, I almost wish it wasn't horror because it's like, but you already got this cool world I want to explore. And then there's all this scary things happening. Basically, the whole premise is like, what if people could hack into your brain? And it's...
you know what? I think I did a Let's Play of this once.
Yeah, it's...
I think I did a How Scary Is.
It's definitely creepy. Yeah, and it just gets all over the place. So that's worth checking out. I didn't finish it because, again, I'm a big baby.
Did we skip over Evil Within 2?
Yeah.
Okay. We talked about the last couple weeks. I haven't got to play enough of it yet. Like, I really like what I've played so far. And
I have every intention of finishing that game next week. I've played quite a lot of it, and I like it so much more than the first one, which I think I've spoken about on the show before. I didn't like that much because I didn't like the level design, and I feel like this is a lot more easy to map out. And it's smarter story as well. I think it's just like kind of less nonsensical. Like, it makes slightly more sense, and the characters are kind of more relatable. Like, I think it's just more grounded in general, and I'm very, very intrigued by everything that's happening.
And we have a Let's Play of that on our YouTube channel.
We do, yeah. That is on youtube.com/.
I had an interesting thing happen with this game where I got like 5 or 6 hours in, and then I got South Park, and then I went in just a completely different direction.
Well,
with
I've
my
been playing the two of those at the same time,
that's
and it
weird.
Is such a good mix. Like, because like the complete opposite of each other every way, and like
in
I love that about
way.
It. They're so good to play hand in hand.
Yep.
I like that. It's like
a good
like,
palate cleansers of each other.
It's like jumping between the pool and the hot tub. You kind of like, you get a good balance going.
It works really well.
Now, finally, Hellblade was, it's not quite a horror game exactly.
It has some psychological horror elements to it.
Yeah.
It's still one of my favorite games of this year.
So I haven't played that. I put that on the list because it came up as like best horror games of this year when I was like searching for all the ones that came out this year.
Yeah, I mean,
I did not know
it deals with some like legitimately scary topics. And the game is so gorgeous and puts you in these, I mean, you're going through like the Norse underworld. And so you're experiencing all these terrifying, surreal, magical realism things. And going through this game, like you have the whole thing is your character is schizophrenic and she has these voices in her head, and playing it with surround sound, like the sound design in this game is so incredible, and the way the voices in your head are second guessing your actions and sort of mocking you about your past.
And you had a mental health thing. I didn't know it was schizophrenia.
Yeah.
That'll be really interesting.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those games. It's way different than anything else that's ever been made. And I know Max, you weren't as high as I was on it, but I totally think this is a game that flew so under people's radars.
It wasn't really marketed.
Yeah. It fell in a very strange spot. I feel like it could have been improved by being more walking simulator, less video game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's what's worth noting is I think that it's a very sort of personal, emotional game masquerading as something more familiar and video gamey. And you can almost kind of acknowledge that by the fact that it's called Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. Like they kind of had to hide the touchy feely part behind something that sounds like a cool sword.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some really, really cool parts to it. I love that there's a bit in there where they basically make a mechanic out of that feeling of walking through the dark and thinking something's behind you.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And I can't even remember if you're actually being followed or not, or if it's just sort of like get to the light, get to the light, get to the light. And you're creeping through darkness to just kind of get to that, like, you know, top of the basement stairs kind of feeling.
Right.
I think it's also arguably the best, the two of the best performances of the year.
Yeah.
Just in terms of acting and voice acting and mocap and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was gorgeous and really original and really high concept and just brilliant in the way it tackles a lot of the themes. But I just thought actually playing it felt a little too video gamey. Like, there were multiple areas in a row where you walk into this really interesting, really gorgeous, really haunting environment, and you spend 15 or 20 minutes lining up light puzzles. And I'm like, well, that feels like a waste of space, you know? But I'm glad it exists. I hope we get to see more things like it. It's 6 or 7 hours long, right? Maybe even shorter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something you can totally rent and fly through if you're looking for something cool to play through before Halloween or for any time through the rest of the year.
Old Sam Hain.
Really play whatever you want. There's no restrictions.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
It has to give you one scare, though. Legally, something you play has to give you a scare.
All right.
Yeah. But yeah, those were our favorite spooky games. Let us know what you think the spookiest game of the year 2017 is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how you let us know. You can just shout it in the air. You can comment, tweet, whatever. Also, in addition to Halloween next week, a big thing is Paris Games Week, which undoubtedly will have a bunch of stuff from Sony there. They're going to probably announce things, show things off, stuff
we're
we haven't seen.
We're expecting a pretty big conference, so mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What's our coverage plan for that?
The conference is next week, Monday morning, Monday the 30th. It is the conference starts at 8 a.m. PT, so 8 a.m. Pacific time, and then we're going to have a pre-show at 7:30, and then a post-show, and then beyond that day, we'll be seeing some stuff, playing some stuff, so we'll probably record beyond a little bit late that day, so we have a chance to go hands-on with that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm excited. I'm hoping we see a lot from Sony, some of the European studios. Like, you know, we haven't got a deep look at Horizon Frozen Wilds yet.
Right.
I want Dreams, okay. Wild, Last of Us Part 2.
I want Dreams, I want Dreams and Wild to come back. Dreams, Wild, Last
Dreams,
of Us.
Dreams, Wild.
Yeah.
Is that one whole title?
We'll have some more Detroit. Maybe some more stuff on, you know, Spider-Man, God of War. Sony has a ton of stuff they could show off. And that's
they also have two big events through the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So
then we have PSX in another 2 months, so we're in a month and a half. So yeah.
Cool. I'm excited. It's I love that we're at that point where we're like, oh, the games we've been excited about for 18 months are finally out and we get to play. And they're like, we've got new games. We're like, oh, what now? Go on.
Yeah.
Get out of here, old games.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's our plan for Paris Games Week. Mm-hmm. We're gonna be doing a lot more stuff lately just because there's games to come out to play and talk about. Head over to youtube.com/IGNBeyond. Please go subscribe. Go check out some of our Let's Plays. Like we said, we just played a bunch of Assassin's Creed. There's also Evil Within 2.
There's a moment in...
Shadow of War was the week before. I've got the whole rest of the year.
Evil Within 2 was the last one we put up.
There's one in there that has a moment where Andrew is mansplaining something.
Andrew and I are talking about Nicolas Cage movies.
And
from the
camera slowly zooms in on Alana.
I was real proud of that edit.
Just complete. You edited that, right?
Yeah.
That is. I meant to text
and
you
and
about that.
And then I put
that is so
Hello
good.
Darkness, My Old Friend in
it
the
back so good.
Of it.
And you were just like, just so completely disconnected. It's just so funny.
Well,
please go
is,
watch those videos.
Because I'm editing them, I think of the joke that I'm going to edit in while it's happening. And... so those kind of things are really easy to do. And you guys kept saying beat that meat in that Let's Play. And
We kept chanting beat that meat.
Don't do that.
Eat
I think
meat.
I had
I don't
some,
know why.
Or eat that meat.
It was eat that meat. Yeah.
That's a very different, very,
what
very
game,
different.
What game was this?
It was the
Evil Within
2.
All right. We
but
can
really, I think these Let's Plays are super funny. Please check them out.
Yeah.
They're a lot of fun to make too.
Also over there, we've got our usual segment, Rapid Fire, where we answer your questions from the computer.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if you want.
They're also the more ridiculous ones. We answer stuff that has nothing to do with video games. So we're mostly integrating, as you guys can tell, the video game questions into the podcast.
And head on over to my channel, youtube.com/mummyumwrapped. I'm doing 6 shows a week, just about that mummy.
And if you want to know a thing we're going to be talking about this week on Rapid Fire, what do we have here?
Chicken dinner chips.
You didn't even pull out the one that makes the sense on the
you
show.
You know what? You don't have to listen to
me
on the
this one makes sense.
Food.
These are holiday ham flavored
Humpty
chips.
Humpty Dumpty holiday ham flavored chips.
Yeah,
that looks fake.
So basically, Rapid Fire now is just a long series of the ham episodes.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, if you're mad that if we were just listening to the audio and you just hear silence and crinkling, well, I held up chips. That was it.
Yep.
So anyway,
it was very dramatic.
You can find us all on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. Alana is Charlanazard. Brian is Agent Bizzle. And Marty is McBiggity with 2 G's and 2 T's. Don't order that at a restaurant. They won't bring you any food.
Not if you go to Arby's.
Yeah. Try it out and let us know. Do it. I guess that's the end of the show then. We're going to just
all right.
Be on.
What happened?
We'll see you guys next week for Paris Games Week.
I never know how to end these things.
That was fine, but then you were like, oh, I don't know how to end, and then it was that
can
was
I,
the end.
Should I weep?
No.
I said,
no,
cheer. How about you cheer?
Max, what you should do is chill.
What?
Chill.
Chill?
Chill?
Chill.
Chill.
We'll see you guys next week for Paris Games Week, and of course, for more content, check it out on youtube.com/IGNBeyond. We'll see you guys next week. Bye. Subscribe to IGN Prime and download the IGN app.
No, you went too far. You went
Mummy
too far.
Unwrapped.
You had an ending and then you went too far again.
It's like a man
I was
with
chilling.
No?
Beyond.
Oh, Beyond. Beyond. Thanks, Dan.
Beyond.
Dan, that's Dan's just going to end the show from now on.
Shut up.
All
get out.
Right.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it.
or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Linsky.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.